All right. So as I said, we'll go again from the two dots towards the bottom of Zion Regret. That's about 10 lines from the end. And Barminim, as I said, we'll keep going quickly, but stop me if you need. Barminim Rav Shmuel bar Abba Meir Krunyam and Rabbi Abba Keshehin Shamin. When we are making these assessments of Idis Zivaris Benyamis, these mid the type of land, B'Shalohin Shamin or B'Shal Olamin Shamin. We're talking about with your own. With based on this person's land, is it subjective or is it objective? B'shel olam hinshan. Aliba to Rabbi Shmuel, lo tzibay l'chos. The Gemara says, firstly, according to Rabbi Shmuel, okay, that was already from the previous Gemara, so I'll not spend time on that. According to Rabbi Shmuel, this doesn't make much of a difference. The nizak, I mean, he's talking about the nizak anyway. He's talking about the person who has had the damage caused to them. Ki tzibay l'chos, alibi to Rabbi Kiva. We're talking in the world of Rabbi Kiva. The omar be demazik, I mean, where the whole thing is based on the damage. There anyway. So now that we're talking about from the damages perspective, my mate of Sadehu, Amrahmana Lamiyote de Nizak, Odilma Lamiyote de Alma. Right, are we talking about excluding the worst properties of the Nizak of the person who has had the damage caused, or are we talking about everybody else? So Omale Rahmana, Rahmana Omar mate of Sadehu, the Pasuk says, that says the best land. Sorry, one second. I'm in charge of door duty, so the door's just gone up. One second. So as you said, we're in now the world of Rabbi Kiva, where the demazik shaminon, we're talking about the damages property. Rahman Omar, right. So we're now Rahman Omar, five lines from the end of the Omar. Rahman Omar Meitav Sadehu. The Torah says the best land. Va'at Omar b'shel olam hin shamin. Right, and you say it's talking about the best land of the whole world. We have a problem with that. We have a question. So we're setting up this scenario, right? If you only have the best type of land, so then everybody takes from that best type of land. Again, same thing with everyone. If you only have one type, then everyone's going to take from that one type. And now we're getting to the crux of what we left off with last time. How you know it is Rebbeinu's? Let's say, sorry, how you know it is Rebbeinu's of the Ziburis? Let's say you had all three, then we divide it up as we've mentioned in the past. Nizakim with Yidis, damages from the best type, Balchob Rebbeinu's, the loans from the middle type, Subas Isha, right, divorce payments coming from the lower type of land. Yidis Rebbeinu's, we're talking about the, let's say you have level one and two, then Nizakim with Yidis, Balchob Subas Isha, Rebbeinu's. So then the loan gets downgraded in a sense, right? The innocent supposition gets upgraded. You get, okay, that's all you have. So in a sense for you, it is, you have level one and two. So level one remains for damages and level two is everybody else. Let's say you have level two and three. And the Zokin of Alpha for Beinonis. So then again, you have the damage and the loan with Beinonis. And again, Subas Isha is going to be from the Ziburis from level three, because you only have level two and three. Turning over to, or not turning over, but onto, depending on your Gemara, maybe turning over to Chesawad Aleph. Idis for Ziburis, let's say you have one and three, so you have the top and the bottom. So there, here already is starting to get, you know, is already adding in levels of where one could potentially disagree, but the Gemara seems to make clear. Nizokin Babinis, but sorry, but Idis, the damages are always paid from the level one, from this best type of land. Ubal Chobuk Subasisha, the Ziburis, the loans and the Subasisha are both taken from Ziburis. So you could have, you know, in theory, could have conceived of someone suggesting that Baal Chob should get from Idis in this particular case. But the Gemara doesn't say that, and maybe we'll figure that out later on. So Katani Miha, through all of that, through that entire lengthy discussion or lengthy clarification of all those different types of scenarios, what did we see from there? Mitzia, one of the Katani Miha Mitzia, Beinonis Veziburis, right? So you have this case where you have only the Beinonis and the Ziburis. Nizokin Uval Chob Beinonis, Uksivas Isha Veziburis. Ve'i Amra B'Shalohen Shamin. If you want to claim that actually they are they're taking from that all these determinations are subjective, i.e. they're based on his best or his worst or his middle type of land, then ta'aseh beinonis shalom ke'idis. There should be no such scenario as having level 2 and 3, or having level 1 and 2 for that matter really. But there should be no such example as having level 2 and 3. Because you can never have level 2 if you just have two types of land, then one is always top and one is always bottom. So there's no, you can never have medium if you only have two different types of land. So the Gemara is trying to use this as a proof, in a sense, that that really these are, we're talking about objective standards of quality of land rather than subjective standards. And this is, as I said, more or less where we were up to. So the Gemara responds, sorry, Ta'aseh beinonis shalom ke'idis v'yidche ba'al chov etzel ziburis, right? And the ba'al chov, the loan payments, should then be downgraded, as we have said in a previous scenario. If you have level 1 and 3, then we know that the ba'al chov, the loans, go down to level 3. So in this case, where we've called it level 2 and 3, but in practical terms, it's really just level 1 and 3, then it should have been the ba'al chov in level 3, rather than in level 2, as we called it, you know, this being this, but why is it referred to as this level 2? Why does he end up in that category? So Hakob Amaya Skinu, then Gemara responds. It must be talking about a case, Hakob Amaya Skinu, what are we referring to? Kagon Shehoisalo Idis Umachra. In a case where you did have the Idis, you did have a better type of land, and you sold it. Right, so at the time you had the better type of land, that is why we refer to your Beinonis land, your level 2, as level 2, because there was a level 1. That level 1 is no longer in your, you no longer have that, right? You no longer have it. But bottom line is that it was, you did have that at the time, and therefore you should be able to claim from there. Now I'll just add in a little, I think last time we talked about what was that time, and I think we came to the conclusion that that we must be talking about the time the loan was taken, right? That is actually a little bit of a debate, but certainly the consensus seems to be, yeah, that we're talking about from the time the loan was taken, when the loan was made, that is the time when the land, as it were, sort of, you know, was earmarked. And interestingly, based on what we're going to sort of continue to talk about, one could suggest that maybe if this idis was sold off, that even still the nizak, the damaged party, should be able to go and claim from the land that was sold off. So presumably it was sold off before the damage was done, i.e. the baal chov, the loan, and the damage don't necessarily have to be at the same exact time. But be that as it may, we're talking about where the, as I said, we had a level 1, you had this idis type land, this best type of land, and that was sold off, and that's why we refer to them, even though we are talking about subjectively, we've now sustained that approach, that we are referring to this to these land qualities as being a subjective thing. The best type of land of this person was sold off, and that is why we refer to his two types as Beinonis and Ziburis, i.e. middle and lower level. So Hochinam and Mistabra, we want to suggest actually this works out very well. Why? Midiktani Achrisi, we have a brisa elsewhere which says Beinonis v'Ziburis Nizokin v'Beinonis, right? Which seems to actually contradict what we've said. That where you have this level 2 and level 3, Nizokin Beinonis, then in that case, the damage payments are taken from Beinonis, are taken from the middle level, and Balchov Ksuvas Isha Ziburis. So actually, in that case, the Balchov does seem to drop down Tezi Beres to take from the lower level. Kashina Hadadi, right? This would be, this would seem to be a contradiction. Elolav, Shemamina, rather must be that Kancha Hoysala Idis and Machra. One case, i.e., our case, the first one we discussed must be talking about where you had this better land and it was sold off. And right? Whereas the later one was talking about, the second one we quoted was talking about the fact that a case where you didn't have originally, and that's why the Balchov is dropped down. Okay? But I think that's more or less where we were up to. So now we're basically continuing to suggest actually alternative explanations for this contradiction. So now that we've raised this contradiction between these two prices, we are going to now suggest alternative explanations, right? We began with this, with the explanation where we said basically that one must be talking about a case where you had better land and sold it off, and one is not. Now we're going to say actually, you know, there are other ways to reconcile these. But Iboizim, so we're about 12 lines or so from the top of Chet Amadar, Ches Amadar. Iboizim. Idi v'idi. Both of these are talking about shelo hoysalo idis imacha. We're talking about the case you didn't have another field and sold it off. You just, these were your two fields, right? Velo kash. No real problem. Why? Hadashavya beinanis shelo ki idis d'alma. V'kan delo shavya beinanis shelo ki idis d'alma. So one is talking about a case where your beinanis actually was like the idis of the rest of the world. And the other one's talking about a case where your Beninus was not like the rest of the world. So let's read two of the answers, and then we'll just clarify the difference between the two of them. V'ibo is the more. Now we suggest a third explanation. Idi v'idi kagon shahoisa Beninus shelo kabeninus de alma. That in fact, yes, in both these cases, your mid-level was like the mid-level of the rest of the world. V'hocha Baha Pligi, this is the difference. Mar Sobar Beshelo Hin Shamin, Mar Sobar Beshel Oilam Hin Shamin. So basically, the difference between these two prices is the same debate as we had earlier, i.e., one saying it's subjective and one saying it's objective, right? So, what's the difference between these two different explanations? So if we just go back, it's not that in this earlier explanation, it sounds like it's true that everybody agrees that where are we over here? Yeah. So even if we're saying it's subjective, right? Everybody may agree that it's subjective, but here we're saying that your mid-level, right, the Shavya Beninus Shelo Ke'idis Dalma, that your mid-level was like the best level of the world in a sense, and the other one is where your mid-level was not like the best, the best of everybody else. And in one, in a sense, when yours matches, let's say we're talking about from objective, so everybody agrees. In explanation number three, we're saying that really these two prices are dependent on this debate as to whether it's subjective or objective. In answer number two, we're saying everybody would agree that it's objective. Answer number one, everyone agreed it was subjective. Now, answer number two, everybody agrees it's objective, but even within everyone agreeing that it's objective, right, if your mid-level matches up with the best of the world, right, i.e. your mid-level is really idis, is an objective idis, is an objective best level, then the Baal Chov is going to be downgraded. Whereas if your mid-level matches up with, you know, mid-level of the rest of the world, then that is where the loan payments will come from, and that's really the, that's in a sense the explanation of these two differences. So just to clarify, we're going to have a fourth answer in a moment, but the basically three different approaches to this contradiction. In approach number one, everyone agrees that it's subjective, but the difference is whether you had land, more land, and sold it off or not. The approach number two is that everybody agrees it's objective, but in one case, your mid-level land does match up with the rest of the world, and in the other Bryce, your mid-level really is considered to be superior. It's considered to be like the best land of the rest of the world. And answer number three is that actually the difference between these two, the contradiction between these two, is in fact the debate that we're discussing, i.e. B'shaloh hin shaman, B'shaloh hin shaman. Are we talking about subjective or objective sort of quality here of these lands? Let's look at the fourth answer and then we'll stop for questions and comments and discussion. So, we're more or less about midway down, slightly above midway down Ahmed Aleph, where we say Ravina Omar. Okay, Ravina Omar. Ravina Omar is the middle of the line. There, everyone with me? Ravina Omar, middle of the line, as I said, just above halfway down the Ahmed. Ravina Omar bid Ula Pligi. They're actually debating the opinion of Ula, or the sort of this teaching of Ula. The Omar Ula, he says as follows: Dvar Torah on a Torah level, on a biblical level, Baal Chov Beziboris, the loan payments should be coming from the lowest level, or from any level really, right? From the you can give from the lowest level. Shene'emar Bachutz Ta'amod, you stand outside. This is I think in Mishpatim. Oh no, sorry, this is in somewhere towards the end of the Torah, somewhere in it, not sure exactly where. One of the latest, or maybe Kisaita, around there. So the Torah says, "Bachutz ta'amod," when you make a loan payment, so the person comes to collect, so they can stand outside. "Ish asher atonu shebo," the person you're collecting from, "yotzi elecho esavo," they're going to bring it out to you. "Hachutzo," out to you. "Ma darko shel odom lahotzi lechutz," right? What is the normal thing for a person to bring out to in a sense? "Bachutz shebekeim," so they're naturally going to bring out their lease. The point is, you're going to bring it out. It's almost like it's up to you. You stay there. The person is collecting the loan, and I will bring you what I'm going to bring you. So the Gemara says, again, the Gemara understands that verse to be meaning that a person can bring anything. And again, the natural thing would mean that they would bring their least quality, or their least favorite, let's say. Umata am omru ba'al chov b'beinon. So why was there this? Why do we push up the ba'al chov loan payments? The Torah says they can get anything. They can get even from the lowest, even from your least favorite. But now the ba'al chov, rabbis came along and said, actually ba'al chov has to be b'beinon. This has to be with mid level. Why? Kadei shelo tinol deles b'fnei lovin. So there are a number of different rabbinic injunctions in order to encourage loans. Loans are considered to be very, very important in Judaism. They're considered to be a very, very positive way to try and help people back on their feet, and to try and again, very, very, very good way of helping somebody who is in financial difficulty. And in order to encourage lenders, right, we say that actually you won't get paid back from the worst; you'll get paid back from the middle. So, right, a person may be hesitant to make a loan if they think, oh, no, but all I'm going to get back is, is low quality, and I don't want to have that. So, therefore, they get bumped up to the mid-level, and this is this injunction. And again, the way that we're, Mar is later kanta de ulo, sorry, the Gemara clarifies itself. Mar is later kanta de ulo, the resolution to our contradictory statements before is that one is following this, one says there is such a rabbinic injunction, and one says there's no such thing. This teaching of Ula is not, and therefore goes back on the standard biblical ruling that Baal Chov, Beziboris, loan payments are collected from even the lowest level. Okay, so those are the basically, as we said before, approaches. Just to sum up quickly, one is subjective payments, talking about a case where, or difference being whether you had better land or not, right? Whether you had better land that was sold off or not. Number two was that we're talking about subjective payments, and the question is whether your particular mid-level land matches up to, the rest of the world, or whether it's considered to be superior. Explanation number three was that the debate is itself about whether subjective or objective payments. And number four was what we just said, which was this debate as to whether there is this rabbinic sort of bumping up of loan payments to be paid back from mid-level, or whether they just remain at their sort of biblical standard, which is Zivoris, which is the lowest level, the standard level. Okay. Any questions before Noah? Yes, Andy.
Can I just clarify? So all this is dealing with a loan which seems to be secured on land, but not any specified parcel of land. Is that correct?
Right.
Again, so if they had specified it's this parcel which is superior, mid, lower quality, then that is the land that has got to be delivered in the event of default.
I suppose so, yes. I don't think this is specified on any land at all. I mean, the point is that you can claim from land even if it's not specified at all. You can claim, sorry, you can only claim from, a loan can be claimed from land if it is done with a contract in halakha. So if we make a verbal agreement, then you can't claim from my land, what's called nechasim shibadim. But if we have a contract, so I owe you, it doesn't say anything about land. It just says I owe you a certain amount, and this is what I have. So then you can claim it from land, and this is the land. Yeah, as I said, so the land is mid level. Or lower level, depending on the conjunction. Yes, Phil.
I think we should wait with the questions because so far we haven't had any of the sort of cases that make any that give any meaning to any of this. Because it seems to me that if and for so long as the, you know, you're talking about a situation where there's enough to pay everybody, so what? It's only when you start to look at the cases, which I can see having flicked forward a bit now after we spoke, Rabbi, after we were exchanging, that is dealt with. It's only in those cases that any of this really has any practical application. Because if you think about it, it's only when there isn't enough to go around and the value of what's left is insufficient that the ranking and the recourse that you can have to the different types of land has any practical application whatsoever. Because, you know, if you've got 100%, you know, if you're going to get 100% of whatever you get it from, who cares what you get it from?
That's what you say, who cares? But again, if no one cared, then we wouldn't be discussing it. The point is,
no, but I don't think we've got to the nub of this yet. So far, none of the scenarios actually have any practical.
But Phil, let's just take a step back.
So let's use our particular scenarios. Our particular scenario is a case where a person owes all three. So a person has damage payments. It looks like Phil's frozen, so I'm worried he can't hear me. Still there?
Sorry, I keep on cutting out.
Okay, no worries.
But anyway.
So I'll just go back. So as I said, so let's take our case. Our case is where you owe damage payments, you owe a loan, and you owe divorce payments, right? But you only have two different types of land. So that's one particular example. You're saying no one cares, but again, the person who's standing in Beit Din saying, I do care, right?
What I'm saying is, provided the value of what you've got is at least equal to what you owe, who cares?
But the person's saying they do care.
I don't think, we'll see.
They're standing in court saying,
in common sense terms, if I owe 100 units and I've got units worth 120, whether they're best, intermediate or worse, who cares? The creditors can get 100 units out of the 120 units. It's when you owe 100 units and you've only got 80 units that any of this really matters a fig.
I don't think, Phil, we've had this argument before that it's only the value that counts. But that's what we said before. It can't be that. It can't be that it's just the value that counts, because we're trying to explain what is meant by the best of your land.
I think we're getting onto it. I think we're getting onto the nub of it. I don't think we've got there yet. That's why I say we should wait.
I think we will get onto something slightly different, but there's no question that this does have, I'm not sure what you mean by it doesn't have practical ramification, because as we said, we're talking about a case where people are standing in front of Beit Din saying, this is what we want. And the Beit Din is either saying, yes, you can claim from that, or no, you can't claim from that. Right. And again, so we have three claimants here who all want the property in Knightsbridge, for argument's sake. Right. Even though, yes, it's true that the, I don't know, however many dozens of properties elsewhere are worth the same amount. But that they say that's what they want. So the question is, which one of them has that?
But that's the one scenario we've not had a look at yet. We haven't had a look at a scenario where there's only one quality of land. We've only had scenarios when there are different qualities of land.
Different qualities of land, but all adding up to the same amount.
Yeah, but the example you were just giving us was completely different. It was where you just had one quality of land, and you were suggesting that certain categories wouldn't be able to recover, even if there was value
there. No, definitely not. They can, absolutely. The point is, you have Beinonis and Ziboris. You have two types of qualities, and you owe all three payments. So which one is claiming from which type of land? If you only have one type of land, then for sure everyone can claim from that type of land. Then everyone claims from there. That was the beginning of that, Brysa. So if you have Idis, Kulam Govimina Idis, if you have Beinonis, everyone takes from Beinonis. That's right at the bottom of Zion Amud Bet, right? So if we go back four lines from the end of Zion Amud Bet, that's what the Gemara is saying there. Eimla Ela Idis, Kulam Govimina Idis. If you only have the best quality land, that's where everybody takes from. Beinonis, Kulam Govimina Beinonis, Ziboris, everyone. Question is, what if you have multiple, right? What if you have multiple and multiple types of land and multiple creditors? And we sort of went through each different type. So I do think, anyway, in terms of Phil's point of holding up of questions, it's an interesting balance. It's an interesting balance because in a sense, let's put it like this. Ma'ad Rashiva, who used to say you've got to learn 100 daf before you ask any questions, you know. So yes, it's true that, you know, until you sort of get like a real we've had that a number of times where we sort of think things a certain way and then you come across and it looks a bit different once you've been through. Yes, it's true that we've got to amass quite a lot of information to really begin to get down into the details of it. But, you know, I think it's good to take questions that help us clarify the understanding as well. Yes, it's true. I wouldn't take any major conclusions from our discussions yet until we get a bit more under our belt.
Always happy to
take clarification questions, definitely.
Who decides which land? Is it the guy that's owed the money or the guy that or the money, whatever, it has to pay back? Who decides?
Yeah, this is also something we've come back to quite a few times. And all I'll say for now is that we have, maybe this is where I'll fall back on Phil's question. We haven't discussed it in the Gemara yet, so I'm not going to comment. We can try and find a better answer than that elsewhere. Maybe I'll look outside. I'm not convinced the Gemara does talk about it in the first parak, at least.
Aren't we saying the following?
But we'll see, yes.
The individual concerned has fairly unlimited top quality, middle quality, and bottom quality land. The person whose animal is damaged, who's suffered animal damage, comes along and says, give me the amount that you owe me from the best land.
Right.
The person who owes a loan says, but you've got enough best land also to pay me. He says, right. No. You get from the intermediate land.
Right.
And then the person... And then the payment for the ketubah, the person says, but I also want from the intermediate land. There's enough left over. And the answer is no, you've got to take from the lowest quality.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think that's very well put. And maybe on that point, we'll just sort of add one level of clarification, which is also maybe based on a bit of our discussion, Phil, off the group, which is that in a sense the person, so now this person has many claimants against them. Let's use Owen's good example. So this person has lots of land, yeah, plenty to go around, plenty of all sorts of quality, but the bottom line is they are saying, I only want to give this lowest level, right? I only want to give this is what I want to give away. These are the properties that I want you to take from, right? You shouldn't have the choice to choose. And So this is what the Torah is laying out principles for. It's saying that the nazik and damage payments do come from the better quality land. Why? Because the Torah says so. Does the Gemara explain why the Torah has that? No, I don't think we do. As I mentioned to Phil, maybe we can find some of the sort of commentaries on the Torah who discuss that. That would be an interesting one. It's the sort of thing that Rav Hirsch may say. But I haven't had a chance to look it up. So, you know, we may find somebody who explains that. But as I said, the Torah sort of stipulates that that the damage payments do come from the best. As we just said in this Gemara now, classically, the loan payments should be coming from the worst as well, i.e. the person should be able to say, take from my worst, you know, this is what I want to give you, that's what you're going to get. But in order to encourage loans, we bump that up, and actually they do get the mid-level. And as I've said, the divorce payments, right, in a sense, retain their standard, their biblical standard, which is that the person does get to give from any type of land. Okay. Well, it was good clarification. Thank you. Tana Rabba. Okay, from the two dots, middle, or is that what, that's how far we got? Yeah. Tana Rabbanon to second half of Chet Amud Aleph. Mochar le'echad o le'shlosha b'nei adam ke'echad kulon nichmesu tachas habanim. So now we're talking about a case where you have three debtors, and they all, the question is, what is the order, right? Until now we're talking about maybe Owen's case, you know, in a sense there's lots to go round. Here we're talking about that where there's an order, right? Maybe there's not enough to go round, so who in a sense goes, who gets first? Mochar le'echad, I think that's what we're going to talk. Mochar le'echad ole shlosha bnei adam ke'echad. So you either sell all to one per... Oh, excuse me. We're not talking about the order of payments. We're talking about now you've sold off your properties, but you've sold them off after you've already incurred these debts, or after you already expected to pay to have these payments. And therefore, these are considered to be what we call nechosim shavodim. It means these lands already have a claim upon them, right? A claim upon them. And therefore, the claim is going to be taken from them. But let's say but who are you going to claim this back from? So, machal le'echad, ole shlosha b'nei adam ke'echad, kulon nichmetzu tachas habanim. So, if you sell to one individual, or you sell to three different individuals, but it's as one, which I think is something we'll come back to explain what that means. How specific do we have to be? What does that mean, ke'echad, exactly as one? Kulon nichmesu tachas habanim, all of them, in a sense, take the place of the original owner, and therefore the debts can be taken from each of them. Bezeh achar zeh, kulon govin min ha'acharon. Let's say it was done one after another. So then everybody takes from the last one. Ein lo govin mishelefonov. If he doesn't have enough, then you go one back. Ein lo govin mishelefneifonov. And again, if not, you go two further back. Okay. Mochron le'echad. What does that mean? You sold it to one. Well, how exactly does this case work? If we're talking about one time, i.e. I sold all my properties to one person in one go. So here we say that basically if when we're selling to one person, we're saying that it all happens in one go, then it must be that the case of selling to three people, where you can say one of them ultimately came first, right? How can we have this case where they all, in a sense, take the place of the original owners? Right, that should be obvious. So it cannot be that we're talking about a case where you sell to one person in one go, because in a sense that's too obvious, right? There's no comparison with shlosha b'nei adam ke'echad. Rather, we're talking about a case where you sell b'zeh achar zeh, so you sell to the same person on three different occasions, three different times. U'mayshna, what's the difference? Shlosha d'kol chad v'chad omar lei. Each one of the three, where we're talking about three people who all are sold properties at the same time, then in that case they could all say the kol chad v'chad amalei hinachti lecha mokom ligbos b'men. Right? I could say, sorry, excuse me, where you sold to three people at different times, right? Different times, then each of them could say, I've left you enough. The kol chad v'chad amalei hinachti lecha mokom ligbos b'men. Hainami. So So too, when you have one person who buys all the properties, he could also say, I've left you enough. I'm sure it's a little bit unclear, but we'll just continue a little bit further and hopefully we'll clarify what the case is. Again, clarifying the case. No, this is the point, that you took the best land last, right? So I bought the person's land. I bought this person's land. I bought their worst, their middle, and then their best. And the fact that I took their best last, in theory, right, if it would have been to three different people, right, if you would have sold to three different people, and the last one to be sold was the best land, then everyone would be taking from the best land, because everyone takes from the most recent sale, right? Everyone takes from the last land, as we said before, because in a sense, each previous seller can say, I left you enough, right? I left enough. The person who I bought it from still had enough to pay you back. But now that it's all been sold to one person, So in a sense, the chiddush over here, what the Gemara is telling us is, mochar le'echad, if you sell it to one person, even if it's bezeachar, at least at this stage in the Gemara, even if it's bezeachar zeh, even if it's one after another, you might say that everybody can take from the iddis, but we'll clarify that in just a moment. Okay.
Rabbi, it seems to me again we're in a very inequitable situation whereby someone who is, say for argument, the creditor, can actually be denied his return because the owner of the land is selling off that land. In other words, because there's no attaching security, even though we're talking about there's a lien on the land here, what he's effectively done, he's defrauding the creditors, because you can only claim from the last person, not the one before the one before.
No, you could only, sorry, in that order. No, we said if there's kulam gobim in achra, and you take from the last person, if there's not enough in there, then ain lo gobim mishelafonov, then you take from the one before that.
But then why should the first purchaser be at a stronger position than the final purchaser?
Because
land of the debtor.
Right. So that's what the Gemara is. So that's what this line at the end means. Hinachti lecham mokam ligvos means that the first purchaser says, I left enough. I left enough to be claimed. Right? I left enough for you to take from. And only if there's not enough, then they don't have that. Then they don't have that claim, and then they do have to take that.
Buyer beware, the last person who buys a final parcel of land has either got to be really careful what debts, if any, are outstanding, or actually not buy it.
Well, all people who buy have to be careful what debts are outstanding. That's the point, because correct. Or everyone who is buying this land needs to check that the person doesn't have major debts against them, because as we said, it will go back as far as it needs to go back, in a sense. You know, if you sell 15 properties, if the person owed hundreds of millions, then it will just keep coming back and back and back.
But let's take the following scenario. Buyer number one comes along and buys all the best land. Buyer number two comes along and buys all the intermediate land.
Right.
Buyer number three buys a huge amount of the lowest quality land.
Right.
There's enough value in the lowest quality land to cover the person who's owed for damages, the person who's owed for a loan, and the person who's claiming under a ketubah.
Right.
So they all end up with worst quality land, whereas the sales hadn't taken place, the person who had suffered damage by an animal could have claimed from the best land.
Right.
But now he can't. He can only claim from the worst land. So to that extent, he's worse off.
Right, right. But as you said, that's a relatively sort of, as we've clarified, I think, a number of times in the group, that's a relatively low-level thing. Again, the amount of money is the same. The amount that a person is receiving is still the same. So yes, it's true that they have not been able to claim from the best. But in a sense, it's almost the reverse. The fact that they are able to claim from the best, well, this is something which is discussed a lot by the sort of later authorities as to what exactly is the... Maybe this is actually what Phil was asking. You know, what is the impetus to sort of make the Torah say that the person has to be the damages have to be taken from the best land. So well, some suggest it's
yeah, but don't, that, but doesn't but doesn't
for the person a themselves.
Hang on a minute. Surely, it's the amount of land and the quality of land. If you're going to take it from the least quality of land, you can have more land to be equivalent to the best quality of land.
All of this is more. Okay, I want to clarify. The state of the record. All of this is talking about the amount, the dollar amount is the same. Yes, correct. All you right. take more okay. land for the less quality. Correct.
There's another implicit fact here. The seller of the land has either dissipated or chosen not to use the proceeds of sale to discharge his right. obligation to the person who suffered damage, who has a loan, or who is his ex-wife.
Right.
So it's a very specific scenario we're looking at here. And I repeat again, and the answer, you know, is that people make the point, so what, unless there's not enough to go around?
Right, okay, fine. So I sort of, okay, I have a feeling, I haven't gone back to the old recordings. I have a feeling that when we started this, you'll forgive me for saying this, but I seem to remember that I said that I wasn't convinced that this is the most practical example. And I think, Phil, you were the one who said that you think it happens quite regularly. So I guess that's part of, yeah, you're right. I do still think, yes, I think we are talking about a very, very specific types of scenarios. Yes, that's true. And in many, many cases, we're going to be, it's difficult for me to put for me to say what is most and what is not. But I would imagine that, yes, in most cases, the amount is the question. And ensuring that the person is getting back the amount that they are claiming is the critical element. And in fact, in a sense, once everyone agrees on the amount, the quality is probably a relatively, a very minor part of this. But that's the sort of minor element that we are focusing on, at least in this particular Gemara. But having said that, I do think that we have come across through this. I think we do, and this is often the way the Gemara works, that through these sort of very, very specific types of scenarios, I think we are encountering more on clarifying perhaps the sort of general process of taking back. So, for instance, now we are talking about, if the person does sell off their land, what is the order in which we take it, right? Who goes first in a sense, which person has that claim, which buyer is able to say that, and all those sorts of factors. So that is, and that I think is much more relevant, yeah.
But, Rabbi, there's also another major difference that we've learned here, which is that actually the third party purchaser could end up being saddled
right.
with the obligation to meet his seller's debts, damages, and ketubah obligation,
right? So there is.
That's pretty major.
That is pretty major, and I don't know exactly how this works in other legal systems. And maybe you can enlighten me. But yes, there is what's called land is called in Hebrew. It is called in the language of the Talmud. It's referred to as nechosim mishubadim, which means they are considered to be. They're considered to be properties which are mashubad is like an eved, from the word eved. They're sort of they are enslaved in a sense. They are considered to be taken, spoken for in a sense, and that is very significant. Yeah, that is very significant. So maybe as Andy pointed out earlier, when you do these purchases and you've got to look into the background, the history of the person that you're buying from. And that is a part of it. We're gonna touch upon here. There are many, many, many Gemaras that discuss this, and we are going to touch upon in a bit also to do with inheritance, right, and how that affects all of this as well, and throwing in that factor as well. So there's obviously lots of detail that goes into when a person can go back and claim the land and when they can't. But in principle, that's true. But yeah, that the buyer, the innocent buyer in this case, can end up. Losing out because they've bought a property in what they think is good faith and actually ends up having to give that property to someone else who has a claim on the person who they bought it from. Yes, that is true.
Are you in effect saying, Rabbi, that in Jewish law, the seller, it is not beholden upon the seller to be honest about debts outstanding on with respect to that land?
It's 100% beholden on them in Jewish law, to be honest. But in practical terms, unfortunately, we know that people are not, or some people are not. So again, you say the same thing.
So is it buyer beware? Are you saying it is buyer
beware? But buyer beware in the same sense as, meaning they have a religious obligation. The person has a religious obligation to tell them. But when you go to court and say they should have told me, the court will say, I agree with you, but they lied, you know. So yes, there's not much. There's no financial payment that we can make for that.
So the fact that they've lied then would not make them liable to criminal prosecution on the basis that they lied?
No, it would. What do you mean? Of course they have to pay back. They have to pay back the seller. They have to then reimburse the seller. Sorry, not the seller, the buyer. They absolutely have to reimburse the buyer.
Right.
But let's say they can't.
Right.
That's the problem. That's what we're dealing with. Yes, I agree with you. Absolutely, the seller is required in any sale. Sorry, clarify. In any sale in Jewish law, you are obligated to be 100% honest. I don't know, if you're selling your car and it has a scratch and the person doesn't, you know, the person hasn't noticed it, you should be telling them. Yes, that's true. But if you are buying the car, I would highly recommend that you do your own search rather than just sort of going on this nice looking person's word. I think, again, this is like. So yes, religiously you do have the obligation to tell, but in practical terms, unfortunately, people don't always do that. Unfortunately, people don't always do that. Thank you for pointing that out. It's good, good clarification. Okay, so we've ended up in this case where, in this scenario, where you have. Where you've sold off the properties, and the final one that this person sold off is their best quality land. Okay, and so now here's the crux. Okay, so ihochi says, well, we're now four lines from the end of the ihochi lisu kulhu veligvu meidis. Everybody should come along and take from the idis. Right, everybody should be coming along to take from the best land because the best land was the one that was sold last. And therefore, that's the one that has the most claim upon it. Mishum de Omar Lahu. This is the reason why they don't necessarily all claim from the Idis. Because this person could the seller, i.e. the person who owes the damages or the loan or whatever it may be, can have the following claim. Mishum de Omar Lahu, the buyer, I should say, the purchaser, has the following claim. If you're happy, if you just take what you're supposed to take, i.e. you please take the Beinonis. I bought this person's Beinonis. I bought this person's mid-level land 2 weeks before I bought their best level land. So you please take that. If you do, then that's fine. Shakiltu, then that's fine. Ve'ilo mahadarna shtara de ziburis lemare. I'm going to sell back the ziburis. I'm going to sell back the worst level land to this guy, v'shaklisu kulchu miziburis, and you're going to then have to take from the ziburis. So if you want to take from this Beinonis, then that's fine. But if you don't, then you're going to end up with worse off land, basically, as a result of it. And therefore, it's almost like a quasi blackmail. Hard to I don't want to use that term in the fullest sense, but it's a little bit of a sort of a saying that I can basically, if you don't want to take what you should be taking anyway, then you'll end up worse off as a result. So ihachi benizakin nami. Now we're turning over onto Chesam and Beis. So the Gemara responds that should be true for Mezikin as well, right? We're again basing ourselves on this previous case, this previous scenario where we said you had two levels and the Mezikin was taking, the damages was taken from the lower level and the Baal Chov seems to have been bumped. Not bumped down, but basically the point is that in that case it sounds like the Nezikin will end up having to take from the Beinonis as well. So he'll also have to take from the mid level because again we're doing a full out blackmail in a sense, right? We don't even say take what you're owed, just take the work, take a mid level because otherwise you'll end up with the lowest level. And a hachob amayaski. So the Gemara is not happy with that, so it says no, we must be talking about a different different scenario, and we're talking about Bayasmi, we're talking about inheritors, right? We're talking about people who have inherited. Delav b'nei piro'un ninhu. So when we talk about inheritance, so then you can no longer claim in the same way from the inheritors. V'shibudo delay ole. Sorry, shibudo delay. Right, the in a sense the debts that were already incurred, right, are lady de ramya, right? They in a sense they still have them. So hilkach lekalamei mahachi, the person cannot actually say this. So the person who's, again, you have this one buyer who bought all three different types of land, and they bought them in at different times. Now it's true that the last type of land that they bought was idis, was this best type of land, but they cannot say, when everyone tries to come and claim from their best type of land, they cannot say, if you don't take a lower level land, I will sell back the other one to the owner. Because there is no owner now. You're going to be selling it back to the owner's children, right? You're going to be selling back to the owner's children, and if you sell it back to the owner's children, then the person's not going to claim from them, because they're not responsible for that debt, right? The debt was already on this land that's been sold on, as it were, right? It's a little bit, we should try and do it with names, or with party A, party B, let's say. So party A was the person who owes all this debt, right? So the party A is the one who took out the loan, for example. So party A is the one who took out the loan. Party A then sold all the land to party B. So he sold everything off on to party B. And now the person who had the loan has come to claim it from party B, Now they should be taking, in a sense, the last land that was bought was the best type of land. So they say, that's the one I want, that's what I'm taking from, because that was the last one you bought. And the Gemara said that you know, take from the final type of land. Party B wants to say, in a normal case, as Party B may say, actually, you should be taking from the Beinonis, and if you don't do that, I'm going to return the worst type of land to Party A. But in our case, Party A is no longer alive. Party A is no longer alive. We're dealing with Party A's inheritance, and therefore selling it back to Party A is not going to help. Not going to help, because the loans, they're still not going to go to the children, to the inheritance, because, as the Gemara says, lav b'nei piro'un ninhu, right? They don't have to pay back this type of debt, right? You have to pay back debt with money, I believe, right? With the money, but not with land, right? So when you inherit land, then the debts cannot be claimed on that land once it's gone to inheritance, and therefore selling it back to the children won't actually help, and therefore this sort of concoction doesn't actually work in this particular case. It doesn't actually work in this particular case. If everyone has a couple more minutes, it'd be good to try and get to. Should we try and get to the two dots quickly, or we'll stop for questions? Let's just very quickly. We'll see if we can finish up to the two dots, and then if anyone wants to hang around with questions, we can do that. So he'll go in the front of the costume. Okay, so hilkach lekalamei mahachi. That's why he can't make this claim that we've just said. Okay, fourth line. Ella, mishum de omar lohu, timer. So because he said to him, timer my omar rabbanon. What's the reason that the Chazal set up this situation where you actually want to, where you should be claiming from the from the better land, because on Rabbanon in the from the chosim shubadim b'makom sheyesh b'neichon mishum takanta digdi. The reason why they set up this entire scenario is in order to help the purchaser, right? Is in order to help this purchaser. Ana b'ha takanta lo nichali. In this case, it's working against me. So and therefore. Kid Rava, we fall back on this principle of Rava, Omar Rava, Kol HaOmer Efshi B'Takanas HaChomim. Very, very, actually, we shouldn't have tackled this now. It's a big, big principle. We'll come back to it at the beginning. Okay, but we'll introduce it now. The Omar Rava, very, very important principle. In monetary areas, if you have a rabbinic enactment which is designed to help a a certain party, and in fact it ends up being to that party's detriment, then that person can say, I don't want to fall back on this. I don't want to have this working now because it's actually working against me. We actually do follow that. If they say, I don't want to have this rabbinic injunction work against me, then that works. And again, the example the Gemara gives, another example of this is that where a woman can say, "Eini nizonis ve'eini osa." Usually, according to the standard ksuba, right, standard marital contract, which is basically what it is, right, a husband sort of has the right to what his wife earns, but then he's also required to provide for her. But let's say she says, actually, I'm earning much more than you are, right? I don't want this arrangement doesn't work for me, right? Usually it's there in a sense to work for her benefit, and therefore in order to ensure that her husband actually is providing for the wife. But in this case she doesn't want that. She says, actually it doesn't work for my benefit. So if it doesn't work for her benefit, again she can say, I don't want this, it doesn't work, I would like to keep, thank you very much, my own salary, what I earn, and I'll spend for myself as well, right? You won't be required to provide for me in terms of halacha, but you also won't be able to have the rights to everything that I earn as well, because that's not working to my benefit. As I said, these are big things which I think we'll definitely have to come back to. We're not going to move. We'll come back to this piece of Gemara at the end, but I thought it was good to try and get to the two dots at least before we end. Okay, any questions before? Yeah, any questions on that before we wrap up? Otherwise, we'll see everyone in 3 weeks. We're okay?
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
No worries, Rabbi. Everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi. See you soon.